What's up, everybody? This is Matt.
And this is Nathan.
Coming at you on a Friday night, per the usual, with the Power Shift Podcast. And we have a main topic. It's an exciting one. Something Nathan and I are real excited to talk about. PowerShiftMedia.net for our regular readers. You may have already seen that we have a new project amongst us that we are focusing a lot of our energy on at this point.
It's just really meant to be.
It is. I guess to kind of dive into it, I believe it was on Tuesday. Nathan fired me a text as I was driving my big old semi. And he's like, "So I have this crazy idea. Are you in?" And I'm like, "What's that?" He's like, "I want to build a rally car, and I want you to be my co-driver." And I'm like, "Say no more, I'm in." So this concept has kind of taken form right then and there. We originally were discussing using your 2G, but we kind of had a nice little conversation throughout the week, and we've decided to settle on
my laser. What we were talking about in last week's podcast, and it's kind of taken a bit of a dramatic change.
Yeah, to say the least. The laser, for anybody who watches YouTube, originally it was going to kind of, you're going to kind of restore it, make it a really nice street car, and we just kind of decided that it may be better to throw it on dirt and snow and go fast with it.
Yeah, I mean, it's still... It's just one of those things, I guess, that we've always talked about doing. Like you were saying, you know, we grew up playing rally games and on, you know, Gran Turismo rally racing. And even when I think the PS3 first came out, I think I had one of the grid games or something like that. And
I remember.
But, I mean, I've always taken interest into rally racing. It was just something that wasn't real and still isn't very popular in the U.S. It's not near as common as other forms of motorsport, obviously, but it definitely is kind of on an upswing right now with the ARA, which is the American Rally Association. So I figured, you know, thinking back to all the memories that we've had together, you know, driving and doing crazy stuff, and it was pretty much me and him always, and he was kind of my co-driver, especially in Tennessee on roads that I wasn't familiar with. He was, and you know, he was shouting out the turn, so it kind of just falls right into place, really.
Yeah, I mean, that dynamic's one that's, I mean, honestly, we've grown that dynamic for the last 14 years, as hard as that is to say out loud, but
drove a gravel road back and forth to school every day for 2 years straight, so.
And many different vehicles at quite
illegal speeds.
Quite high speeds we won't mention on the podcast, but they were definitely higher than the said posted speed limit. So, yeah, I mean, it's kind of nothing new. We've done the loose surface stuff, obviously lots of snow hooning, lots of snow hooning, and everything from DSMs to F-250 V-10s, so you definitely have a lot of that loose surface experience under your belt.
E46 BMWs, E90 BMW, DSMs, I don't know if you said DSMs, but yeah, there's
been a lot, yeah.
Just about anything that we've owned during the winter time.
Yeah, I mean, I've
Sentra.
I've hooned the Jag XJ6, which, as it turns out, is like the best car ever to hoon in the snow. For whatever reason, it just works. Yeah, I mean, we've done a lot of that. And we just kind of decided that the laser, the best way that car could possibly live on is to give that car basically that stage to perform, being our first time out. I mean, it makes sense to use that car.
We chose that for a few different reasons. Mainly, the main reason is because we're extremely familiar with the DSM platform. For two, we have a major parts surplus from over the years of wheeling and dealing and parting out cars and
that's a stuff huge like part that. Of it,
so,
right?
Yeah,
there.
I mean, we have plenty of spares if, you know, anything were to happen mechanically wise, we're going to have plenty of backups. So it's just one of those things where we won't have a huge overhead just to start out. And mainly, pretty much all it boils down to is the safety equipment, the specialty equipment for rallying, like mainly the tires, building a cage, seats, like our suits and helmets and shoes. Pretty much that's main things that we have to, the safety equipment for the car, you know, the fire extinguishers, glass breakers,
first aid kit,
stuff like that, that, you know, it isn't super expensive, but it adds up.
Oh yeah, it does. I mean, we had discussed before kind of having that moment of clarity and being like, hey, DSMs, we had discussed other platforms, and to basically just, you know, even to think about like using an Audi or something like that, obviously it's taken us years to get all the parts we have for DSMs. It would be a massive budget burden to try to basically start over in a brand new platform, especially our first time out. So yeah, I mean, it makes sense because the laser's already here, mm-hmm. and what's nice is it is very disassembled as is, yep. and so at this point, instead of taking a car that's full and having to go through all the trouble of stripping it, now it's reassembling per the needs of the car, so.
Literally like a blank canvas right now as it sits.
Yeah,
the only
exactly.
thing we have to do is literally pull the rest of the interior and sound deadening, and then it's pretty much ready for, you know, the build back up, so.
Yeah, for our YouTube people, be sure to watch out tomorrow. I'll probably have the video posted tomorrow night if I get time to edit it, because I will have my kiddo, but I am going to YouTube how to use dry ice to break sound deadening out of the car. I'm going to go get dry ice, I'm going to start chipping all the deadening out, and pulling the steering rack, and doing some of that stuff there, just getting that, those things accomplished, getting the rest of that interior out of the car, and we actually just ordered some stuff for the car. We're real excited, and we decided we're going to depower that manual rack, so we ordered new inner and outer tie rods.
Power rack to make it manual.
Exactly. So, yeah, we're basically converting the power rack to a manual, just depowering it. Mm-hmm. And we got all the new tie rods, inner and outer, the actual dust boots for it, and we ordered the stuff to kind of freshen the car up. You know, thanks to Rock Auto and their wholesale mm-hmm. prices.
Yeah.
So, yeah, I mean, there's a start. And before the podcast, I kind of run an idea alongside Nathan. A lot of people obviously know I have a 90 Talon. And this was another huge reason to use a 1G. One of the big expenses is engine management. And, well, the laser's a 90, and my Talon just happens to be a 90. For anybody that kind of doesn't know the backstory, 90% of my Talon build came from the laser. So my Talon basically is what the laser was in its heyday.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm like, hey, you know, I've got DSM Link. Let's just run it in the laser. And throughout the week, I just kind of started thinking to myself, I've been batting around going auto all-wheel in my head for a little while now. And to me, the rally effort and the idea of doing it is a much stronger emotional thing for me than honestly trying to go fast ever was. So I'm like, hey, you know, we have all these parts. I have a Comp Stage 3 clutch in the car, and I have all these great parts that we could use for this build rather than buying it new. So basically, we're going to use the Talon to reassemble the laser, which was the laser to begin mm-hmm. with anyway. So, yeah, at this point, the Talon, just doing that will save us an easy $3,000 because it has coilovers mm-hmm. already. It has brand new control arms, brake rotors, dual piston caliper conversion, all the things we'd have to buy again. I've already got it, so I'd rather focus that budget on our good seats, buying the roll cage material, the safety equipment, and just making the car what it should be.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, like you were saying, it's funny the way that the circle of life.
Yes.
Which is an amazing thing, you know, too, by the way, that you are, you know, willing to do that, because it's not like I gave you the stuff to begin with. You legitimately bought the stuff off me to build right. your Talon, and now we're kind of putting it back into the laser, so.
For me, it's a no-brainer, because, I mean, for how long have we talked about doing an honest-to-God competition mm-hmm. race?
Yeah, we didn't know what it was going to be. We knew, like, we wanted to do HPDE, possibly, like, autocross, but, you know, now it's kind of boiling down to this, so.
This is by far the best idea we've ever had.
Not really that we couldn't compete in HPDE eventually, you know, in the future, but this will definitely get our foot in the door to motorsports, because the only form of, like, competitive racing that I've done, and it was, like, on a super, super amateur level, is just, like, bracket racing and drag racing.
And, yeah, I mean, I love drag racing. I've raced at a couple shootouts, and mm-hmm. it's an absolute blast, yeah. but an HPDE would also be a blast, but honestly, when I think of, like, the purest form of racing available, and the fact that it does come in at a lower startup cost, to me, rally is the purest form of motorsports mm-hmm. there is, because literally, if your car is operational, the race doesn't stop till it's finished. Either you mm-hmm. get killed or the car catches fire. Otherwise, I mean, you go back and watch, you know, some of the older rally stuff. They'll roll these cars on their roof, push it back on the wheels, and go on about their mm-hmm. day.
Yep.
That's like our mentality in a nutshell right there, is and if the car's still running, it can still go.
And in being us in an entry, being novice, we're actually restricted. Legitimately, there is a minimum, you know, size that your intake opening can be in front of the turbo. So it didn't matter if we were running, you know, an FP green or something like that.
Right.
It would still be super restricted. So that's why we're actually choosing a small turbo anyways. Because believe it or not, the T25, the opening on the inlet of a T25 turbo that comes stock on a 2G DSM is 45 millimeters. And as a novice, anything boosted, you're limited to a 30 millimeter opening.
Yeah, so yeah, that restrictor basically just mm-hmm. cuts a lot of it out.
So it doesn't matter necessarily the budget that you have going into this. You could spend a lot of money, you know, into a cage or buy a car that's ready to go. But no matter what, when you're first starting out and a novice, you're still restricted, even all motor. There's yeah. a certain restriction, so this kind of evens the playing field to where it's more of, I'm not going to say that it's driver skill and talent, but a lot of it is that. Some of it's going to be luck, obviously.
It's nice, though, just because somebody can't come in with super deep pockets and just dominate. Right. Because that's the best thing about wheel-to-wheel and style racing, is you've seen it. There's that famous video of the Russian dude who buys the Ferrari 458 Challenge car and literally does dog shit in racing. I mean, the guy didn't even, he wasn't even in, like, the top 15.
Mm-hmm.
In drag racing, money can absolutely buy wins. Right. But in this form of racing, whether it's HPDE or it's, you know, wheel-to-wheel, rally, money doesn't necessarily buy you success.
Mm-hmm.
It's going to come down to getting your seat time, having the skill, knowing how to dial the chassis based on how you drive the car.
I like that. In this form of motorsport, the money buys you the means to practice a lot.
Because
you're going to go through, you know, tires a lot more. You're going to go through, you know, a lot of equipment. You know, not necessarily you're going to wear out the car, but a lot of tires, a lot of brakes, entry fees, you know, right. stuff to be able to go and practice.
Those expendable components. Mm-hmm. Which is nice. It's kind of funny you mentioned the restrictor thing. I started researching restrictors, and I found one that's actually ARA and FIA compliant. That's mm-hmm. one everybody talked about. I have the link. It is a 30 millimeter restrictor, but it's noted to be the highest flowing 30 millimeter restrictor.
Oh, like trust me, I've already thought about, since we have the lathe, about making like an insert that fits perfectly in the front of the turbo, and it's like...
That's how this is. Literally, it's a velocity stack. Mm-hmm. It goes down to 30, and it's a velocity stack on the other end. So basically, just go in the inlet right into your charge pipe.
Yep.
They charge, I think, $250 for them, but, I mean...
We could make something.
Fucking genius, really. So, yeah, you gotta run a restrictor, but it's still a velocity stack.
The only...
So it's not quite as restrictive right. as some of the other restrictors.
The only... and that's funny. The only restriction on the restrictor... Yo, dog. But the only restriction is that it has to be 3 millimeters thick. That's the only thing that they specify. Yeah. Has to be a minimum of 30 millimeter inner diameter, and it has to be at least 3 millimeters thick.
Yeah, we could do that.
So, I mean, literally, you can make something.
Make it an aluminum flare it in so and it's out. Not heat soaking. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Exactly.
Yeah, I mean, we've started putting a lot of thought into this stuff, and... I mean, we've done a lot of tire research. I'm like, that's what sucks. Those one MRW tires were out of stock. Hopefully mm-hmm. we can find them in, because there is a guy who said he competed with a set of those tires. He did 6 events in a year, and those tires were still serviceable.
Yeah.
So they seem to wear pretty darn well because they're a medium. Like, what we're looking at is we're looking at, like, the gravel rally, but then they have snow-specific rally. So, for the gravel, you definitely gotta have a specialty tire. Just an off-the-shelf all-season is going to get you killed.
Mm-hmm.
But in snow, what's nice is you can literally just pick up a set of, like, Noki and Hackies or Nordmans. Those are actually approved in ARA. And, yeah, I mean, they're not very expensive. And, shit, mine have 8,000 miles on them. They still look like new.
Mm-hmm.
They'd probably get a few seasons out of those.
Yeah.
Snow tires are on snow, they don't wear.
Right. And you're literally only using them, you know, for a couple competitions a year at that.
The only time you'd really get wear out of them is when you're driving in between stages on the actual tarmac. Mm-hmm. So, and even then, they wear like iron. So, yeah, we've kind of done some of that research and kind of utilizing the Talon to help this build. I mean, we don't have rally specific coilovers on my Talon. Ironically, K-Sport does sell rally specific coilovers for front wheel drive 1G. They are $1,500. Could be an option down the road yeah. to step into, but for now we got the Megans, and we can just raise them up, you know, as high as we can get them, and it beats the shit out of a stock, you know, strut or shock with the stock spring. Mm-hmm. So it'll be a nice foot in the door. They'll articulate way better, and it'll obviously help save some weight.
We can dial in the rebound on them at least that way.
Yes. The K-Sports are pretty hot, because what's nice about those is they have quite a bit more travel. And the adjustments don't actually have an effect on the dampening. So, like, if you're actually, like, dialing preload into the springs, they won't affect any other facet mm-hmm. of it. So, the rally-specific stuff's nice. It's just pricey, obviously. It's very, very specialty.
Oh, yeah. It's just like any other form of racing where, you know, there's entry-level budget stuff, or you can, you know, whatever your pocketbook can afford at that point.
I mean, at this point, we have, like, 90% of what we need. You know, we've got the clutch, the trans. Basically, we're going to pick up a set of cams. We're going to use the stock Evo springs and retainers, which for, you know, DSMs, that's a very nice upgrade. They're factory beehives, and I know you can rev them out to about 85. But we're going to be a stock turbo, so we're going to be pushing that hard anyway.
Yeah,
but,
probably will fall. Well, with those cams, it might get us to 7, you know, efficiently.
I was gonna say, probably about 72, mm-hmm. somewhere around there, be a good soft limiter place. And
but with such a small turbo and higher compression, you know, we might have a, if it revs out to 7,200, we'll have a, you know, 5,000 RPM power band.
That, I mean, that's what rally is all about. When you think of the infancy of turbos and how they evolved, rally pushed that a lot. I mean, I believe it was the Evo 5 or 6. It was one of the first cars, the Tommy Mäkinen Evos, had a very specific ceramic wheel turbo in a production car. They homologated that so they could now use it in rally.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, a lot of that technology came from that. A turbo that can move a lot of air but can also spool real fast. That's obviously important in those settings where you're living in second and third gear a lot and you really need to pull through corners. But we're trying to solidify the car, you know, get a good radiator in it and just try to keep heat at bay. And we're going to, like, make a skid plate for it. We will definitely be YouTubing every step of this because it is a very huge step for both of us. Mm-hmm. We've never set up a car like this. You know, usually it's been, like, these 500 horsepower builds for people to try to go fast, you know, in a straight line. So this is all a... It's a learning curve for us, and we look forward to taking everybody, like, listening along for that ride. And it's uncharted territory, but I know I'm crazy excited about it, to say the least.
Mm-hmm. You can join us in our adventures of performing stage rally.
I mean, it's exactly what it is. I mean, basically, the laser is going to have like a 195, 65, 15, you know, fatty sidewall tire, which will also help with that ride. Mm-hmm. And
luckily, I already have a set of Eagle Alloy 15s that are going to be perfect for it.
Yeah, I agree. That's going to help us out a lot.
Those actually came on a car, the white 2G that we put together a couple years ago. Those came on it, actually.
Man, that'll be a good wheel for us.
They're not real heavy, and because the rally tire naturally, because of how robust it is, they're actually pretty heavy.
Yeah.
So doing the two piston front brakes, and you know, having a little bit lighter wheel will definitely help. Because I know just from my truck putting the bigger wheels and tires on it, how much. Like, it'll more really braking effort down. That I have to do. Like, not necessarily how much it takes from the truck as in acceleration-wise, but more in the braking.
I mean, if you remember on the Veloster, those stock 18s were stupid heavy, mm-hmm. and I put those Sparkos on it, and, you know, I went from an 18 to an 18 with a wider tire, and it was so dynamically different, like, down the road, as we have a little more money, we'll probably pick up, like I said, of the Sparco Terras, which are mm-hmm. really nice, and they're a real nice rally, like Omash-style wheel, and in a 15, I think they weigh 15 pounds.
Yeah.
Obviously, they're not RPF-1 light, but they're light, or like Cozy K
that,
ones.
And from what I was reading, too, you don't necessarily want the lightest wheel in rally because they have to be able to take some abuse.
Yeah, an RPF-1 would not be a good rally wheel. I mean, they hold up good on track use, but there are guys who have cracked them with potholes.
Mm-hmm.
So obviously not a good rally wheel. And everybody always wonders, you know, why are Sparco, you know, Super Leggera so expensive, and why are, you know, these old school speed lines and, you know, these rally wheels so pricey. Well, that's exactly why. Oz has always been a rally wheel manufacturer.
Mm-hmm.
Ultra Leggera, Super Leggera, they're not cheap wheels. But they were literally homologated on so many rally cars. Like the Subaru guys, they know the Pro Drive wheels. And they're not cheap, but they hold up to, you know, jump. Did you take it off any sweet jumps? Yes, I have.
Yep. They got to be able to handle that.
Yeah, I mean, if you watch some rally footage, those guys are catching serious air. And
I think that's why they like a smaller wheel, too, because if you notice, most of them are a 15-inch wheel.
That's what it seemed like to me. And, I mean, obviously, stepping down your wheel with the, you know, basically get as much as you can without going over. I mean, in loose surface, wider definitely is not always going to be a better scenario there.
Right.
Versus, like, when you're on hard road, you want to get as much meat on that thing as you can, but loose surface is a whole different animal. You know, you start going through snow and stuff, a wider tire is absolutely going to hurt you a lot.
Yep.
You got to be able to cut through that stuff, and instead of, you know, trying to displace it all, It's so much learning. Like, the tire tech, rally tires are very expensive. That's something I've learned already.
Mm-hmm. There isn't a budget rally tire.
No. No. You know, the truck guys will know, like, Maxxis. I know, actually, Dad had buckshots on that green F-250, mm-hmm. and my brother had them on his red F-150. Like, Maxxis are usually the budget truck tire, but Maxxis rally tires, on the other hand, are pretty well-regarded, and a 15 and a 195, those are $200 per tire.
Mm-hmm.
That's about what a good Michelin 4S would cost at an 18.
Yep. Yeah, there's quite a few manufacturers, and what I've noticed, too, is they're always sold out, it seems. There are not too many manufacturers in the U.S., so most of them have to be sent from overseas anyways.
Right.
So a lot of guys, to save, they'll order them in mass quantities, and they'll only order them, you know, once or twice a year.
Tire Rack doesn't even sell rally tires, which is nuts, because they offer full slicks, race tires. But it does seem like, what was that place? Not 1010 Tire, but there was another well-known tire shop.
They're Simple Tire, I think.
Yeah, maybe. They have them.
Mm-hmm. They're not the least expensive option, but
no.
It seems like...
You buy them when you can find them, and you just suck up the cost.
Yeah.
That's what it boils down to.
DMAC USA, they do have a USA division now, which they started out in, you know, like Ireland and Europe in general.
Right.
In Australia, I think they were pretty popular there, but it seems like they are a little bit more budget-minded, but still you're talking from, like, a $235 to $250 tire, they're like, you know, $185. So
seems like most of your 195, 65, 15s, like the, we found those, the MRHs, I believe they were coming in at 155 a tire, and the reviews were stellar, but it makes sense they'd be sold out, because it seems like it is a really well-known tire, and they actually win a lot of sanctioned races with them. So they basically start at 155 and they go all the way real, you know, real north from there. Maxxis are about 200, and
yeah, there's actually a lot of manufacturers. It just seems like the majority of them are 200 to 250 bucks a tire.
I like think Michelin offers them too, but they're going to be pricey.
Cooper is actually a contingency sponsor for the ARA, so they offer a rally tire.
Something to look into.
Hoosier actually has started making rally tires, so
those would be legit.
They're a contingency, but they're more expensive. I think they're like 260 something a tire.
Kumho offers the 700s, but it seems like overseas, so getting them here would be
they also offer an R800 as well, which is a little bit finer block. I was researching those.
I joined a rally group on Facebook. It was actually UK-based, but a lot of people were talking about how the Kumhos worked pretty damn good over there. trying to learn about rally tires is challenging.
Huge, yeah.
It's not like, you know, street car tires where, you know, throw a good set of Michelins on it or throw a good set. I've always liked to run BF Goodriches, and obviously, you can't really go wrong with that. But when you start getting into, I mean, there's so many different tire variations. It's like, are you on a mud/grass stage? There's a compound and tread specific for that. For gravel/rallycross, that could have tarmac. There's a tread for that, like the ones we were looking at.
There's different compounds of those treads.
Yeah, soft, medium, hard. And then obviously for winter, you know, you just pick up your snow tire of choice, whatever you're comfortable with. So that kind of alleviates that one, but, and you got to really be careful when you're doing winter shit too, because, you know, if you're like me, the first thing you think, you know, you think you're being smart, I'll pick up a set of studded Nokians. Yeah, well, that'll work, except if your rally is taking place in a state that doesn't allow them, because ARA makes their regulations based upon the state you're competing in. So Michigan, for example, like one of the first ones we was looking at, they don't allow studded tires. But in Ohio, if that same rally was going on, if it's past November 15th and before April 15th, you could run those. So if you wanted to be a guy who ran studded tires, you'd have to have two specific set of winter tires, one un and one studded.
Mm-hmm.
That's where it starts getting tricky. You got to really read those rule books.
And speaking of state regulation, that's also another thing that pushed us towards the Laser versus the Eclipse as well.
Good point.
Because they emissions based for what your state requires is what they require on your vehicle.
Yeah.
So we would have had to run a catalytic converter on the 2G because it's a 99 and it's less than 25 years old. So going with a 90, which is going on 30 years old, and
we can get away straight piped.
Right. So now we can, you know, as not that our county that we live in anyways has emissions testing to begin with. So
yeah, we don't hear at all.
I mean, we wouldn't have an issue anyways registering a car that was straight piped that's, you know, less than 25 years old anyways. So
just, yeah, that is something they do check. You know, if you're pushing that 99 GST like we was looking at, yeah, they're going to go check for a cat. And, well, we're not exactly guys who run cats, so it's not like we just have cats laying around, because we don't.
And that would suck even worse because you're already restricted to 30 millimeter inlet.
Yeah.
And then restricting your exhaust even more with a cat.
And what really sucks about that is if you try to be sneaky, like we've already discussed, where, oh, I'm restricted to a 30 millimeter inlet, and I'm restricted to stock injectors, which we are, but the fuel pump's open, and the fuel system's open, so, well, you just run, you know, dash 6A and fuel lines and a big 255 pump like what we're doing. Now you can flood the fuel system and allow it to overboost, and it will make up for that. Well, if you have a cat on the car, now that it's running slightly richer, well, that cat won't last long.
Nope.
By the end of a good hard weekend, that cat's done.
Getting good and hot.
Oh, yeah. That cat will either start very much melting down, or it's just going to end up plugging itself. So, yeah, not having a cat is just ideal, because any of that extra fuel, just like it always did in my Talon, it just comes out the back and makes a cool flame.
And not only that, having Link, we can dial in anti-lag, so we can able to keep it spooled even more. You know, on D-cell, we can say how much fuel we want it to dump, what timing we want it to dump on, you know.
Oh, yeah. That rolling anti-lag life is so where it's at. Mm-hmm.
So we'll be able to utilize that even more.
That's so hot. Yeah, I guess I mean, obviously I knew that feature was there, but it's something I didn't even think about is, yeah, anybody who's watched Rally, I mean, if you watch, like, especially the old Audi Group B stuff, anytime they're letting off, they'll make all those crazy backfires and explosions. That's why it's just that rolling anti-lag keeping that turbo moving.
Mm-hmm.
And they allow it in ARA. They just say you can't have an injector within the turbo itself.
Yeah, it can't be anything extra. It can't be, like, forced air like you... How... If you read back to the Ford Focus WRC car from, like, the early 2000s, where they actually had a stored tank where it used excess boost pressure and put it, built up into a spare tank in the rear bumper. And then when they were under, you know, not in boost, they would use that to help spool the turbo or boost the intake pressure.
That technology is absolutely insane. Some of the stuff they was trying to get away with back then.
Yep.
But if you got the rolling anti-lag, well, that's perfectly good because the engine management side of things is open on in ARA. You can.
Yep.
I mean, that's what's weird. I mean, you have to, your horn has to work and all that, but
it legitimately has to be registered with insurance.
But they allow. Literally, the transmission, throttle body, all that stuff is actually open. Like, literally, you can run, and it's crazy, but you can run a sequential gearbox in ARA. This gives you a 100-pound weight penalty.
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah, you can roll up in a fucking 6-speed sequential $10,000 Jorgen Ericsson gearbox. But can't upgrade your injectors, at least in novice class. I found that hilarious.
Mm-hmm.
But it is cool, though. I mean, I do like that they'll allow you to have your creativity. But a lot of stuff, like the rear subframe, has to have the OEM mounting points. And
yeah, you're only allowed to change one mounting point. So there must be some kind of vehicle that they upgrade the rear diff, you know, mount or something like that, so it changes. So
yeah, like the control arms have to have the OEM geometry.
Mm-hmm. They can't change the track width of the vehicle any.
Something I thought was crazy, like they'll allow you to modify the shock towers up to 3 inches higher.
Yep.
But ironically, when building a cage, they only allow DOM tubing. So it has to be cold drawn unalloyed steel. So, you know,
which is odd in motorsports.
Yeah.
You know, like what we're used to, drag racing and stuff like that.
Chrome Ollie's king. Yeah. I mean, obviously, listeners of the podcast know we love Chrome Ollie and we use it a lot in the shop. But yeah, no, Chrome Ollie is stronger in the sense that you can run a smaller, you know, wall thickness, a smaller diameter, and have the same strength of a higher wall thickness DOM, so therefore it's lighter. But yeah, ARA, Chrome Ollie is absolutely exempt. You cannot run it.
The FIA in general.
Yeah, man, kind of made me wonder why. I wonder what their reasoning was.
Probably because FIA sanctions a lot of bodies around the world, and I'm going to say that probably a lot of bodies that run under FIA sanctioning around the world don't have access to Chrome Ollie, or may not have TIG welders to be able to properly weld Chrome Ollie. Like in, I don't want to say it bad, but if you look in a lot of the European countries, they're rallying these little teeny tiny cars that
that's probably, true,
you know, are extremely budget built. And
yeah, I mean, that is true. It does help even the playing field if everybody has to run one material. It stops somebody from having an edge, you know, a smaller outfit who might not have a TIG.
Mm-hmm. It seems like that is, they like to try and even the playing field, even like all the way up to like R2 class where they're competing. You know, that's like a couple steps under WRC.
Yeah, that's a pretty hot class for sure. That's some serious shit in that. Yeah, I mean, it works to our benefit just because DOM is so much cheaper than Chrome Ollie. Mm-hmm. I mean, a Chrome Ollie, for example, like DOM, most sanctioning bodies say 0.95 wall thickness on DOM. For NASCAR and Chrome Ollie, they run a .0225.
Yeah.
And I believe it's a 1 3/8 for NASCAR. But in DOM, it has to be 1 7/8. It has to be an 0.95. That's how big of a difference that is. Mm-hmm. Now, 0.225 Chrome Ollie and 1 3/8 per foot for a general consumer usually costs $10 to $14 per foot. And DOM, that may only cost you $4 a foot.
Right.
So when you know, think you're building a cage, you might need 50 feet of this shit. That is quite substantial.
Mm-hmm.
You know, you're talking about a cage that would have cost $700 just in materials is now $275.
Yep.
So it does allow a wider spectrum of people to do this. I mean, somebody told me, you know, shout out to the opposite lot guys. A gentleman paid $3,500 to have his cage fabbed in his car. Shops charge a lot of money to do certain cages.
It's a lot of, it's labor intensive.
Very. Because no two cage installs will ever be the same, right? Because if somebody's 5'10 and then somebody's 5'8, that cage is drastically different.
Depending on what style of seat that they prefer, their seat position.
That main hoop has to be designed around that seat. Yeah, I mean, it is intense stuff. It gives you an appreciation for why these builds cost so much. Because it's not, there's no cookie cutter Venn diagram to building a race car. No. That's a lot of what I am learning.
There's a set amount of guidelines for the cage. and there's a set amount of rules for what your car can and can't be, and then you just build it to that.
Which is cool. I mean, the FIA rule book that we have, it's huge. It's quite large. There's a lot of things they look for, and I mean, it's going back to the cage thing, which is literally, to most people, the most intimidating part of it. It's not like you can throw together a cage that looks nice and be like, it'll be good. No, they critique every single weld in that cage. Mm-hmm. And they all must, I mean, it's not like it's good enough. It's got to be on. If it looks off, they're not going to give you a logbook for that. So that's going to be one of the, honestly, tedious but yet fun challenges. Just to be able to say, you know, when we do nail it, like, hey, mm-hmm. you know, we built this cage.
Right.
To me, I like that. That, to me, seems like a really cool challenge.
It does. It's going to challenge my out-of-position skills for sure.
Oh, yeah. Because, yeah, it's not like you can weld it up out of the car and just put it in the car. Because, right. Well, that don't work.
Nope. There are certain tricks that you can do to weld the top of the bars for, like, your main hoop and your halo bar and your front down tubes and stuff like that.
How does that work? Well, I was wondering that.
Believe it or not, you actually, once you fit it in, you drill holes with a hole saw into the floor pan. Then once you get it tacked up, you'd use your steel plate like your footers.
Yeah.
You put those over your holes. And then once you fit all your tubes in, then you pull those steel footers out, and then you drop the cage down through the floor.
Oh.
Weld the tops of your bar or your tubing. And then you slide it back up, weld your footers in, do all your reinforcement
re-weld
that
your
way.
Floor pans yep. up. That makes perfect sense. Mm-hmm. Because I was like, how would you know, these roof bars are right up against the yeah. roof. So it's like, how do you
yeah,
weld
and
these?
It's not exactly a very tall roofline car, so we're going to have to tuck it up as high as we can get anyway. So
yeah, because obviously, it's nice about Nathan is he's a short shit. So, I mean, obviously, that does help you out with, like, helmet clearance.
Mm-hmm.
But I'm 6'5", you know.
That's what's nice about solid mounting our seats and...
Yeah, we can run my seat lower down.
We're going to be able to, yeah, tuck them right to the floor pan pretty much, so...
It helps me out because I'm not driving. I'm doing the co-driving, so I don't need to be able to see the gauge cluster or any of that. None of that means anything to me. So, yeah, we can get me real low, and at that point, I can see everything I need to see. Just mm-hmm. being able to see what's ahead of us and looking, you know, at the sheet and... Yeah, versus the driver, obviously, that seating position is a little more challenging where you're comfortably yeah. able to get on the pedals and you can
still
actually
be low
see
enough
the
for the center of gravity, but yet have enough sight, you know, line of sight.
Him and that bone always cracks
yeah,
me.
Yeah, I'm
up.
Waiting for the quintessential bone drop onto the floor.
Yeah, always, every time. Mm-hmm. Give it about 28 seconds. Yeah, it is. It's crazy how much goes into this stuff, you know, designing your seats to keep it low, but also be able to see what's in front of you, because visibility is obviously quite important.
Mm-hmm.
Can't really drive if you can't see anything. That's a large issue. That's a lot of the little things we'll be learning as we go and facing. I know we've talked about flocking the dash in the car since mm-hmm. it's cheap to do.
Yep.
And that obviously will stop any glare from coming in. Obviously, the windshield in the car is not tinted, so...
Which, I'm going to have to find a way for us to remove the tint off of the windows that are on it, because they're only allowed to be 50%.
I was going to say that they can be tinted to an extent.
Mm-hmm.
So, if we... if we wanted to tint, it might not be a horrific idea.
I know we'll definitely have to pull what's on it off, though, because it's definitely too dark.
Yeah. Yeah, those were tinted pretty dark, weren't they?
That, not only that, it's starting to peel off the back window, so pull it off and just redo it, maybe.
Yeah, we can maybe tint that windshield just a touch to maybe help with visibility and maybe do the side windows.
That, and I actually believe they do a polarized tint where it's clear, it's actually see-through, but it actually... causes a shadow to the inside of the vehicle because of the however the polarization works on it.
We may want to look into doing ceramic tint, just because, obviously, the cars don't run AC.
Mm-hmm.
And during ARA, in competition, if you do crack the side windows, they can only be cracked 1 inch. Mm-hmm. And, honestly, it would probably be a very bad idea, because then dust infiltration. Mm-hmm. So, the ceramic tint, I know somebody who did it, it'll actually cut interior temps like 40 degrees.
Yeah. And not only that, they promote doing some kind of lamination over the windows to keep them from shattering all over if you, you know, obviously get into an accident.
Yeah, I mean, you've tinted windows, so it might be advantageous for us to get some ceramic tint and maybe try to, that'll help climate control the car.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, I'm not against it. If you're buying just the film, it's not very expensive. It's the labor that's expensive.
Yeah.
And obviously, maybe
get a hold of Harvey, because that's what he does now. So
that's not a bad idea. I know a lot of guys run like the roof scoops, which, much to my, you know, very huge surprise, a lot of people think it's for airflow, and it does help with that. But ironically, the biggest reason cars run them is actually for visibility, because dust builds up in the car and it actually acts as a fresh air vacuum, which is nuts. It's not so much an intake as it is an exhaust. I thought that was nuts when I was learning. I sent you that Jalopnik article.
Yeah, it helps create positive pressure in the cab to force the air out.
It's pretty nuts. We're going to try, obviously, initially to run without it, but if it becomes an issue, then, well, you'll probably see one of very few roof-scooped 1Gs.
Mm-hmm.
But if it comes to it, I've already found one, and yeah, we will absolutely do it.
Yeah, I mean, it definitely, there was one where something happened to the guy's roof scoop, it blew off or something like that, and the inside of his car filled up and he couldn't see and had a massive crash because of it.
Yeah, that was that Jalopnik article.
Yeah, it was.
Yeah, they are, because it was basically showing why they are so important. So, hashtag tuna no crust, Paul Walker did it first.
Mm-hmm.
He definitely had a roof scoop on his infamous 2G. Which is kind of hilarious, but
somebody put it in the wrench time.
Yeah, they did. It's a hell of a machine. It is kind of funny, though. But yeah, I mean, that is their actual purpose, is visibility and to assist somehow with getting that clam bake out of the car.
Yep.
In the summer, it's going to get a wee bit toasty.
I've seen a video where they're flying down a rally stage and then it sucked a bird in. Literally a bird come flying in through it.
Only in rally does shit like that happen.
Mm-hmm.
That one video, a dude hit a deer.
I'm sure if there's been an animal to hit on a rally stage, it's been clobbered.
That would be your dad if he did rally.
Yeah.
He'd be the dude to hit the deer.
Mm-hmm.
Every time. That's what's fucked up about rally is 90% of rally, a lot of it,
there's
like
the bone drop.
Yeah, there it was. A lot of it is actual, like, public trails and shit.
Mm-hmm.
There's actually a video that Jalopnik shared. Man, this must have been 5 months ago. Hyundai was doing the new Veloster in rally car. It was out in Russia, and it was actually on a public road that was closed down, and somebody got on that road, and they were absolutely getting it around this blind corner, and here comes this car right in their lane. This driver's fucking reactions were nuts. He literally avoided the guy somehow, but that just tells you how sketchy it gets.
Mm-hmm.
That dude was dodging live traffic while doing about 130 around a corner.
In most foreign countries, their safety, they're a little bit more lax on it.
Yeah, it's
to
not,
say the least.
It's not so great in Russia. Just go watch some dash cam videos. You'll see what we mean. That's just one that comes to mind. You know, here's this brand new Hyundai, and kudos to that driver and insane reactions. You can actually Google it. It's a very well-known video. It scared me shitless watching it through a GoPro.
Yep.
It gets pretty intense. That's what's nice about a lot of the ARA stuff is, you know, our safety is a little bit better.
Mm-hmm.
I don't necessarily think we have to worry about a soccer mom and a Tiguan coming on head-on as.
The way that it sounds, some of the Southern Ohio Forest Rally is on public roads that they do close down, but they are like gravel roads. So that'll be pretty interesting.
Sounds like a blast, mm-hmm. because I do know a lot of the gravel roads in southern Ohio are a lot of fun. A while back, I went on a little trip to Hocking Hills, and I was actually hauling balls down a couple of them in a fucking Hyundai Sonata. And I kept thinking to myself, this would be a lot of fun in an RX-7.
Mm-hmm. I actually went down around Zanesville when I bought that RX-7 a while. I mean, well, heck, it's probably been 7-8 years ago now. But that one, not only did we go down a gravel pass, we actually had to drive through a creek to be able to get to it.
You gotta love Ohio. And what's funny is if you just jump on 70 West for like half an hour, you'll be in the hellhole that is Columbus.
Mm-hmm.
Sorry to any Columbus listeners, but I deal with it every day. I have the right. Yeah, only in Ohio can you go from a metropolitan area to crossing a freaking creek.
Mm-hmm. That's how you know we're hillbillies, too. Creek, not a creek.
Yeah, it's not a creek. It's definitely a creek. Yeah, I mean, that's a lot of our big news there. It's kind of just our main topic there is, you know, the laser has found its... And the bone was found in the fork.
Mm-hmm.
But the laser has found its true identity in the form of a rally car. And the Talon will basically be absorbed back into the laser as I go one of two directions. Either an all-wheel drive auto, which is something I'm thinking about, or probably to Nathan's pleasure. I've been nonstop scrolling FCs.
Ooh, yes.
So I may end up in a rotary car. I know once we get the rally car where it needs to be, I want to start a savings fund for one of the two. But I have been looking at a lot of FCs lately.
Get them now while you can.
Yeah, that's what I keep telling myself. Is I'm maybe thinking about going to the dark side and trying a new platform for me and doing a rotary. But
not that DSMs aren't gaining value, but not quite like the FCs are.
FCs are stepping into like alpha territory, yeah. And I love it, though. So, the Talon will definitely, basically, it will be pretty much alchemized into the laser, which I think is awesome. It's a great way for both cars to take on an amazing identity.
It's not that we both won't get to enjoy it. And
oh, God, yeah.
And it's hilarious. I keep going back to it, but it's going to be a street legal car. So, literally, we could hop in it and fucking...
Yeah.
Drive it anywhere, or, you know, if one of us wanted to take it for a weekend, it's not like it's going to be, you could literally take it out to dinner for your dinner date.
You can throw, they have like track car insurance for track cars, or if something does happen, well, you're not losing your whole ass on it.
Right. And,
I mean, to me, it's awesome. I think of a white, you know, panda laser with the black roof, the black wing. With some rally armor, mud flaps, mm-hmm. and red on it.
Yep.
You know, maybe adding like a couple like hella driving lights to the front. That to me is a fucking sweet looking 1G right there with the higher ride height of fat meaty tire. Like the KC or the hella lights in the front.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, does it even need to be said? That's the hotness.
It is.
I definitely like it. We're going to be cranking out on it quite hard. It's something we have been talking about a lot all week. It's pretty geeky stuff, but I know I'm excited to go freeze my ass off in the garage tomorrow and chip out sound deadening. Something I never thought I'd say. I have
that heater out there. It's not too bad. I had to turn the heater off today because it was like 45 degrees out and I was sweating in there.
It does a good job.
Mm-hmm.
I'm excited to, you know, start rebuilding that steering rack and just getting the rest of the interior out and, you know, pulling the clutch out of the Talon, pulling the good stuff out of the Talon, putting it back into that car and seeing it take its form.
Right.
You know, getting the seats ordered.
And it's really not that far away.
No, it's not. Once we have the Talon here and we can start, you know, pulling those parts to get everything out. We got 5 minutes left, and it's the perfect time to actually mention the, in my opinion, the funnest part of this whole build. What engine are you putting in the laser?
A 2G7 bolt.
Yeah, that'll blow everybody's mind. Mm-hmm. Because you were the first to do it as far as we know. Back then, everybody said you was a liar.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, Nathan basically innovated the 2G7. I know Aaron Gregory runs one now in a fucking 1G.
Not only that, it was a 2G7 bolt in a 90.
Yeah, you definitely did it first.
So, not only that, you have the one-year specific wiring harness and...
making it work, too, yeah. With the 90 ECU, and because that's
what... And that was the thing, too. Remember, that ECU was a 91 to 94, so it didn't work correctly in the tack department, but literally it was a 91 to 94 ECU.
That's where I got you. Because yep. I got the specific 90 ECU. Mm-hmm. My tech works real nice. Yep. My Talon had the same shigs. I had your old ECU. Yep. And my, as soon as you'd step onto the tack, would just go to zero.
Mm-hmm.
Like, nah, we're not doing this.
And this time, I actually know how to tune DSM link. So
oh, yeah.
We're going to go speed density, which is going to make it much nicer as well.
I mean, shit. Honestly, it... The 7, I'm, oh, look everybody, I know this is a hot debate, we have a lot of DSMers that listen. I'm a pro 6-bolt guy for drag racing. Yeah, notice how I stopped there. 6-bolts are great for pushing stock blocks, for sure. They are superior to the 7s, absolutely. That being said, I love 7-bolts and I've always defended them, and there is a reason Mitsubishi chose it for the Evo. I think in a rally setting, a higher revving engine with wider connecting rods, something that has that smaller and, dare I say, in that setting, punchier turbo. Yeah, T25s are great in that. T25s have zero lag.
Mm-hmm.
That shit's working the minute you even think about it. So, for what we're trying to do, I do think it's the better motor.
Yeah.
6-bolt to me wouldn't be the best choice. Because we're not trying to push 500 on stock rods. We're trying to maybe push... a better
compression.
Exactly. So it's just more responsive. So even with the restrictor, you know, pushing 200 horse at 2,300 pounds, that whole thing will roll.
Oh, yeah.
Have a lot of torque. It'll do everything we want. And we get to use a 2G trans, which is stronger.
Yep.
So...
I think it's going to be the best of both worlds.
Yes. 1Gs are lighter.
Tune it on pump gas, or I believe VP offers a rally blend. It's like 100 octane or something like that.
Yeah, they offer the contingency stuff. Mm-hmm. Yeah, because they, I think they explicitly said no race gas.
Yeah, you can run certain classes. I think the open classes can run E85 or... any E85 I think it gasoline was just no or leaded diesel. Is yeah, what it no was. Leaded fuels.
So, yeah, I mean, taking the 1G, which is a lighter car, putting the you know, 7-bolt from a second gen along with the second gen trans, which is stronger, just kind of takes the best of the two platforms and melds them into one car.
Mm-hmm.
And just, I think it's going to work perfect for us. And I think this podcast would be a perfect one to just do the part one on.
Yeah.
We're actually coming up to it, but...
That, and it's fairly late. It's almost 11:30 at night, so...
Yeah, we got to go out and bleed a beetle clutch. Yeah.
We kind of sat here talking and discussing stuff, so we kind of got a late start, but... Better something than nothing.
I just want to say, everybody who wants to know more, definitely feel free to reach out.
Yeah.
Watch the YouTube stuff. It's going to be coming. I'm going to film part one tomorrow, basically the opening to the build. And be sure to share the podcast. I know this will probably appeal to a lot of people who've thought about getting into forms of motorsports. So, you know,
this is a way to join in on, you know, yeah. We're extremely green to this. You know, we are learning along the way as well. So.
And any, you know, DSM guys out there, I know we have a lot of support. I definitely do want to go ahead and, you know, shout out Rick's Racing for, you know, being... He's been being really awesome through the whole process. He's trying to help us out, so we want to shout him out. any other DSM shops out there who want to try to give a hand and see these cars doing work, please reach out to us, whether it's just a discount or, hey, we can do this. Dude, we need it and we appreciate it. Coming up on the last 15 seconds, yep. So I'm just going to say it for anybody out there. Make sure you modify, maintain, and drive your cars. And this is Matt.
And this is Nathan.
Y'all have a good weekend.
See ya.